Where we want to pick up today is Acts chapter 8 and verse 4. If you've been with us the last 2 weeks, you know that we've been talking about evangelism, passed out a sheet, and went over some things relative to that subject, and that was designed in part to help us be prepared for what we find in the fourth verse of Acts 8. That passage says, "They therefore that were scattered abroad went about preaching the word." As you look at that word "therefore," you have some information that's related to Acts chapter 8 and verse 3. That, of course, would be the intense persecution by Saul. You have Stephen being killed at the end of Acts chapter 7, and Saul is giving his approval to that. And you have that persecution that arose against the church because of that event. Acts 8 and verse 1, you have the burial of Stephen. In Acts chapter 8 and verse 2, Saul's going, the Bible says, entering house to house. We're not given a lot of information about that, but I do think it's likely that that would be on worship days. That would be the obvious time to find Christians when they're at worship, and he's going into those places. And later, you may remember from Saul's life, 1 Timothy chapter 1, verses about 12 to 14, he says, "I was a blasphemer, I was a persecutor, I was injurious, I did it ignorantly in unbelief." And that, of course, would look back to times like this. When we think about God's will, we know from the Great Commission, Matthew 28 and verse 19, that we're to go into all the world. And these Christians had done that, I think, to a very good degree in the area of Jerusalem. But now they need to get outside the area of Jerusalem, and God is using the persecution to help them move beyond. We've at least touched on briefly some of the inconveniences that they would have had. It would be like saying, okay, tomorrow, pack up. You need to leave the city, the community that you're in. And you move maybe 50 miles or 100 miles or 500 miles from where you are. Even with our, well, let's just think about that for a second. How would we do that? How convenient would it be for us? Somebody says, tomorrow you got to move out. Leave everything behind. If you were given those directions, how would you do it in today's world? All right, I think that's true for us. Even if you go out and you get the rental truck, you're probably going to have to leave some things behind, because when you think about it, if you've got a house and you've had stuff accumulate maybe for several decades, you're probably not going to be able to pack it all up all in a day. What else?
I thought you said leave it all behind. What do we have to pick up?
What you're thinking, your job, your life, not necessarily possession. So good question as far as trying to clarify that. Thank you. What will we do? You're probably going to have to leave some possessions behind. What else? All right, so a disaster. You're going to leave your house behind. It would be nice if you could sell your house, but there's no guarantee of that. So you're going to lose your house, lose some of your possessions. What else?
Friends.
All right, you're going to have to leave your friends behind. Now, maybe some of them will go with you, like they did in the old days, back there in the Old West, but you're probably going to lose at least the majority. No email. What else?
Family.
All right, family's probably going to be left behind or at least separated for a period of time. Anything else? Well, for us, we would like to probably clean out the bank account, wouldn't we? Or at least take some cash with us. I mean, you know, if that's possible. But if you're like a lot of these people, you're a day worker. And you're thinking, we're going to show up every day and we're going to get paid day by day. And you have to leave that behind. And I'm even get a day job in the new spot, ideally. Hopefully you've got a trade where that works out. So this was a very, very serious matter for these people. And yet, as Luke describes this, "they therefore that were scattered abroad, they went about preaching the word." We've already seen that word translated "scatter" back there in Acts chapter 8 and verse 1. Again, we don't know how quickly they scattered. It may have been they're taking a few days to get as much as they can together. Maybe the scattering is immediate. But if the persecution is going on, you would expect that they did not hang around too long in the area of Jerusalem. I don't want anything you want to add or ask before I kind of switch gears here a little bit. Okay, Stan?
I never thought about this before, because we always talk of blasphemies in terms of vocalization. When Paul said he was a blasphemer, could that have been by his actions as well as his words?
His actions as well as his
words?
Yes. I think so. When you look at everything that he did to oppose the Christian faith, this was God's system, and he was doing everything he could as far as word and deed to oppose it. So, yes, I think across the board, he looked at himself in that regard. Anybody else before we switch gears? Okay, let's run a couple passages here. I've got some references I do want to run today. Some of these are coming a little bit, but these first ones come from Matthew and John. Matthew 10:23, and then also two references in John 20. Matthew 10:23, anybody want to take care of that one? All right, Jeff, thank you. And John 20, we'll start with John 20:19 and then look at John 20:26. Carol, 20:19, pause for a bit, 20:26. Let's go back down to Matthew 10:23 first.
But when they persecute you in this city, flee ye unto another. For verily I say unto you, ye shall not have gone over the cities of Israel till the Son of Man be come.
Okay, I mention this for a couple of reasons. Number one, it's related to the text. Number two, it's related to some of the things that we've been doing recently and some things that some other congregations are doing right now because of the shooting that we had a week ago and some of the other problems that we've had in religious groups in the United States recently. Jesus says, okay, you're being persecuted. People don't want you there. You're in a somewhat hostile environment. What do? Read it again, Jeff, if you would.
But when they persecute you in this city, flee ye into another. For verily I say unto you, ye shall not have gone over the cities of Israel till the Son of Man be come.
All right, did Jesus just say, sit there and take it? Let these guys do to you whatever they want? No. What was his point? Get out of town. Go somewhere else. Your life, it's right to take some steps to preserve life. We also see this in John chapter 20. Let's start with verse 19, Carol.
When therefore it was evening on that day, the first day of the week, and when the doors were shut where the disciples were for fear of the Jews, Jesus came and stood in their midst and said to them, peace be with you.
Okay. Do you think the doors were shut because they were concerned about mosquitoes? What's he mean the doors were shut? They were locked. And you may not immediately think that when you look at the King James, the ASV, some more modern translations might actually use the word locked. So don't think shut in just the sense of just shutting the door. The idea there is locked. All right, now Jesus shows up. Now, you have a week passing between John 20:19 and John 20:26. Let's also read the 26th verse. Okay, so you've got this week period that passes. Had Jesus, on that first occasion when the doors were shut or locked, thought that that was a bad thing? You would think that the disciples would have said, okay, that's a bad thing. So this 8-day, this week later period, they would not have locked it. They would not have locked the doors again. But what do you find? Doors locked here. A week later, doors are still locked, and Jesus has a chance to talk with the disciples. Now that tells me something, especially as I relate it to Matthew chapter 10 and verse 23. It's not wrong for God's people to take some steps to protect themselves. Now, we do remember from 2 Corinthians chapter 10, I believe it's verse 4, Paul said the weapons of our warfare are not of the flesh. The battle, we're involved with the battle. But Paul said it's not a spiritual, it's not a physical conflict. We're involved with a spiritual conflict. But even in that spiritual conflict, it's still right to go ahead and take some steps to preserve life. Jesus did that. On at least one occasion, I think you can probably pull out at least two or three. There's a big conversation going on right now in a lot of congregations, maybe more down south than up here. But there are a lot of discussions as far as should we lock the door, should we not lock the door, should we do this, should we do that. And it's sad that some congregations have to discuss that. But this is not the first time that some of these discussions have taken place. And we've got a preacher's meeting on Tuesday. One of the things I think that's going to be discussed is going to be, quote-unquote, church security. And we've got one member that sometimes comes to those meetings, and he's of the persuasion that, well, you just kind of sit back and let God handle it. We do want to let God handle things, but at the same time, we also have some personal responsibilities. So we have done some things in the past in that regard. We're doing some, we have done some additional things recently, and Steve's got some additional things to say about that today. But just bear in mind, it's not quite identical. You don't have some crazy person here. You've got somebody who is dedicated, someone who is working on behalf of the Jewish system. It's not like they are an insane person that wants to do damage, but still, you do have some parallels there. And the first Christians took some steps to deal with that, and there's biblical authority for us to do the same thing. Thoughts on that before we move down a little bit more? Betty, I'll take you second. We'll take Stan first.
Well, I agree with everything that you've just said. Obviously, we have discussed it, and and we'll be probably discussing it quite a bit more. But we want to, I think, not overlook the fact that when Jesus sent out the 12, and he said, if people won't hear you, shake the dust off your feet and go on. And so I think there's also the fact that, or part of all of this is, don't let the opposition pin you down to the point where you can't do anything. If you can't get out from under it, you've got work to do. Go on. Go somewhere else where they will receive you.
Yeah. Regroup, so to speak.
Right.
And that happens today sometimes. You may have in a factory environment, a certain section of the line goes down, and rather than send the guys home, they would say, we've got some pallets over here that need to be taken out or shifted or something, and we're going to redistribute our workforce because right now you can't do what you normally do. And the same thing is true with Christianity. You may have to redistribute people, or you may have to actually relocate, but you continue to do the work somehow regardless. And that's true in health. You may not be able to in the later years. Your hands may not work as well as they did. Maybe your voice doesn't work as well as it used to, whatever that might be, but you can go ahead and shift things around and continue to be active, continue to be productive. Betty? And take it.
Say, okay, whenever the persecution started, the ones that could get out left. They went other places. And I realized that that did spread the gospel as well, but at least they didn't sit there and say, oh, come get me. And the verse that says that it is not a physical fight, but a spiritual fight, I think that is more individual. We are supposed to fight against the flesh individually. I mean, it can apply abroad,
sure,
too. But we are to fight against the flesh individually and do it spiritually in our heart, not physically. Go out and beat someone up because
right,
they don't believe. I mean, we're supposed to be meek and humble in that way whenever we try to spread the gospel. And to me, that's what that verse means more than actual, okay, I don't have the right to stand up and defend myself physically,
yeah,
if I'm being attacked.
Yeah. I have no qualms with that as far as offering that up as far as an explanation. But you do find sometimes some people who take a very passive position.
Uh-huh.
You would have some religious groups in this area. For example, you know, when you start thinking about items that would be associated with some versions of the Amish and the Mennonite and so forth, and they would, you know, it's God's will. If they come in and, you know, they want to do some kind of injurious activity to us, then we just need to sit back and take that. And I don't think that you can justify that from Acts 8. The Christians were not willing to just stay there and be slaughtered.
And to me, that attitude, that passivity of not defending myself in any way, to me, I'm sorry, and saying God will take care of me, I'm sorry, but to me, that's tempting God.
However you look at that, I can say for sure that people generally don't use that same thinking in other areas. For example, if they're looking for a job, they generally don't say, I'm going to stay at home and just sleep all day and God is going to give me the job. Or some other things. They recognize that they have some level, some degree of personal responsibility. And that applies. James described it as faith without works. That you do have that human element there that needs to be involved with that. So you have, if we can use the word partnering, God's going to do his part. We also have a part, and this will tie in a little bit with the sermon as well, but those two need to merge. Those two need to be working hand in hand. And you see that with...
Everything you can,
sure,
to secure yourself.
Absolutely.
Be it whether it's a major or not.
Yeah.
You know, you do what you can, then you leave it to God, yes.
Yeah.
But you do have, just like we have, the work of God's not going to save me unless I do the work of coming to him and being baptized. I think we have that same responsibility in
saving our lives and do what we can.
Yeah. It would be like a parent saying, well, God, help me to have good kids, and they never do any parenting. I think people generally recognize that that's probably not going to work out too well. There has to be a human element there. And you can just go down the list as far as examples. And this would be one of many. Anybody else want to offer a thought there? Don, did you? Okay.
I guess it's more of a question that probably should wait for being talked to us later. But, you know, I'm all for security in the church. And I think we as a church have to walk a fine line. How transparent we are with that security. Do we put up barricades out there? Do we have, you know, code that you can get in the building and all that kind of stuff? Part to our visitors, does it look like we don't have security? But we do.
Yeah.
So that we're an open congregation. So we welcome people to come in and worship us. And the congregation feels safe, but also that it's a welcome place to come.
Did you want to add any more there?
No, it's just.
Okay.
Yeah,
I don't want to take any of Steve's thunder. But let me just toss this out, because this is one of the things that was tossed around within the eldership recently. If you have, and this is not just true for Goshen, but if you have somebody at the front door, and that person is sort of your first watchman, we might say, your first set of eyes as far as a potential problem, you do two things there. At least this is the thinking. You, number one, have somebody that is, quote unquote, doing some security work. But at the same time, you also have somebody there who is going to greet people. And if you're a visitor, you walk up to a door. Again, I don't know how you feel, but you're coming up to a building that you perhaps have never been in before. It's a strange place. And you're not quite sure what's on the other side of the door. And you've got a friendly face there. I think for most people, they would say that that's a positive thing. Maybe you need a bathroom immediately. You've been driving for a while. Maybe you have a child or something else, or maybe you need a drink or whatever. Whatever that is. Maybe you have a question. Have services already started? But you have somebody there that is willing to meet you and offer some kind of assistance. So you can do something like that. Somewhat transparent. At the same time, it's not too overt as far as what's taking place. The other thing, too, and this is another item that... Again, I don't want to step on Steve's toes here, but we're headed into the winter months. What if somebody falls in the parking lot? You might have in some congregations, there's nobody out there that's actually looking at the parking lot. Somebody comes in, maybe someone who is not very steady on their feet, they fall, and maybe it's after services have already started, the person has, for example, run late that morning, and you've got somebody out there in the parking lot, no cell phone. And they're out there for 5 or 10 minutes or 20 minutes. Nobody finds them. So, as I say, you can do some things that I think kind of straddle that line there, where it falls into the category of security. It also falls into the category of we want to be helpful and friendly.
I agree. It's the Walmart philosophy. When they had the greeter, everybody said, oh, this is great.
Sure.
The Walmart greets them, but they weren't out there for greeting.
Yeah. Yeah. It's stop-loss prevention, basically. But yeah, it's the same kind of thing. Now, when you've got somebody rifling through the bag and saying, okay, we want to make sure that you've not stolen anything, if you had a congregation, and this is where things are, just to be totally frank with you, there are some congregations, I've not talked to them personally, but I have read that they disallow large bags. If you're coming in with, and again, I guess your definition of large is going to vary a little bit, but if you're coming in with some monster bag, maybe a lady that's got, a big old, or you're coming in with a big backpack or knapsack, there's some congregations which simply say, we're not going to allow that. Now, again, that's probably going to, need to be determined on an individual basis. Maybe you're in an area where there's some hikers or stuff. But to me, that would not be, in a lot of places, looked upon probably very favorably. But again, that's going to be a local thing. All right, that it? Let's go back and talk about the word preaching a little bit from Acts chapter 8 and verse 4. They were scattered abroad, and they went about, they were preaching the word. That is an important word. It's a verb. It's found more than 50 times in the New Testament, and I think it's helpful as far as trying to understand some things associated with that word. Let's put some things up here on the board. Point number one, it's only used one time by Matthew. We'll take a look at that passage. It's going to be in Matthew chapter 11 and verse 5. not mentioned in Mark or John, which is kind of interesting. So just once in Matthew, not in Mark, not in John, but Luke becomes fond of this word. In fact, in his Life of Christ record, he uses it a number of times. And it's almost like he uses it as a springboard for some things in the book of Acts. It's like he's thinking, okay, the book of Acts is going to have a lot to say about preaching, so I'm going to use this in my account of Jesus' life. Now let's take a look at some of those passages. After Matthew 11:5, we'll take a look at Luke chapter 1, verse 19. Then we'll take a look at Luke chapter 2, verse 10. And then we'll pick up some references in Acts. Acts chapter 10, verse 36. And then we'll take a look at 14:15. And then outside of Acts, we'll take a look at 1 Corinthians 15, 1 and 2. Galatians 1, 8 to 9, plus verse 11, and then we'll look at two more, Hebrews 4, 2, and 1 Peter chapter 1, verse 12. All right. Anybody close to Matthew 11 and verse 5? Kitty. Okay, especially the latter part of that. Gospel preached to them. And Jesus said there specifically as far as what economic group? He said the poor. And I find that to be interesting for a couple of reasons. Number one, the gospel is for all people. We make that point, and that is correct. But when you think about teaching people, and this is not always true, but when you think about teaching people, oftentimes, who are the people, economically speaking, who are willing to listen the best and the most? The poor. If you go out and knock doors, especially in a poor country, you're down in an area where people don't have anything. And what are they looking for? You're poor. What do they want? Better life. They want hope. They're looking for something that's going to make this life better. But if you have somebody who has it all, and you can look at this assembly, if we've got at least one car, a house, food and a table, I mean, we're pretty well set. You know, we're thinking, you need something. First thought in the mind is, probably not. Now, I might want something. I might want something that I can't afford. But as far as needing something, you know, really. I've got shoes, clothes, house, everything like that. So, the poor. So, it's interesting that Jesus seems to recognize that in Matthew chapter 11, verse 5. All right, again, skipping Mark and Luke, let's take a look at some information from, or skipping Mark and John, let's take a look at Luke. Luke 1, verse 19. Who's got it? All right, Benny.
The angel answered him, "I am Gabriel, who stands in the presence of God. I was sent to speak to you and to bring you this good news."
Okay. Good news is that word. That's how it's translated there. Not preach, but good news. And I find that to be interesting for this reason. An angel was involved with preaching. A lot of people are interested in angels, their work, and so forth. But if an angel was involved with preaching, what would that suggest about that work, that activity? I'd say it's pretty significant. And not just any angel, but it's Gabriel, a special angel. Okay, then let's take a look at that next chapter. Luke 2, verse 10. Who's got it? All right, Gary.
Then the angel said to them, "Do not be afraid, for behold, I bring you good tidings of great joy, which will be to all people."
Okay. Now, again, an angel. But in this case, we find these great tidings, or the preaching, the proclamation, which is associated with what? With great joy. So when we think about preaching, a lot of times I think as people look at preaching, how do they see it? What kind of news is it? Yeah, it's the old hell, fire, and damnation stuff. Well, you may have some preaching that takes that form. And you do have certainly some preaching in the Old Testament and some in the New that would be the fire and damnation, the fire and brimstone stuff. But also when you think about preaching, ultimately, Even the fire and damnation preaching is designed to do what for folks? Take them from here, bring them to here, and say, hey, you've got good news. And that's what the gospel is. All right, let's turn over to the book of Acts. Acts 10:36. Volunteer?
Okay.
All right, Maxine.
The word which God sent to the children of Israel, preaching peace through Jesus Christ, he is Lord of all.
Okay, now that takes us in a slightly different direction than Luke chapter 2 and verse 10. This is the time of year where people are thinking about peace, aren't they? Peace on earth. Well, anything wrong with that message? Nope, good message. But when you start thinking about the preaching that was done in the first century, was it around December that they were limiting that message? No. When they went out and talked to people, joy and peace through Christ. Doesn't matter the time of year. Maybe in December, you may be in May. But that is part of the preaching. You've got that joy, you've got that peace through Christ. All right, here's any thoughts that you want to add or ask before we pick up with Acts 14, 15. Okay. Acts 14, 15. Let's take a look at that one. All right, Kathy.
And saying, sirs, tell me these things. We also are men of like passions with you, and preach unto you that ye should turn from these vanities unto the living God, which made heaven and earth and the sea and all things that are therein.
Okay. Let's pull that verse apart a little bit. He says, we're preachers, we're proclaiming this message. But he also, as he talks about that, he says what? We are men of like passions. What do you think he means by that? Yeah. So you can look at the proclaimer of the message, and I don't think this is so much true for people in the church, but especially outside the church. People look at the person, or if you're a Christian, and people know that at work. You've talked about Scripture. How do they view those people? Well, I think that's a good general answer.
They have a totally different standard for them.
Yes, that would be true. Absolutely right. Anything else, though?
They're obviously not supposed to do anything, because if you say anything, oh, you're judging or whatever.
There would be that as well. Anything else? What about sin? You think that there are people who look at preachers as sinless? Or supposed to be.
Expected.
Yes, expected to be. And I mean, that's just kind of their vision of it. But here in Acts 14, verse 15, you have there, we are men of like passions. You guys struggle with that? Well, guess what? They're saying, we have those same struggles. And yet, as a lot of people think about those who proclaim the gospel, they would say, well, you know, you're in a completely different category. You know, you're this super spiritual person, and you know, you're just sort of exempt from the world. That is simply not true. We're one of the group. We're in there with everybody else. Anything you want to interest? All right. 1 Corinthians 15, 1 and 2. Who's got it? Gary?
Moreover, brethren, I declare to you the gospel which I preached to you, which also you received, in which you stand, by which also you are saved, if you hold fast that word which I preached to you, unless you believed in vain.
Okay, what's the old saying? In one ear?
Out the other.
You think that happens with sermons? Oh, yeah. I'll tell you, I'm ashamed to admit it. Sometimes, and a couple in here can say, oh, yeah, I've had that conversation with Brad. Somebody can come up and say, hey, that sermon that you preached a couple weeks ago, I've got to go back, and immediately it's not right there. So I'm going to have to think about that a little bit sometimes to go back. Let's see, now, wait a minute. There's been a lot of data that has gone through these two ears and eyes in the last couple weeks, so I may need to kind of refresh things. I wasn't unconcerned about, not that I wasn't focused on it, but again, and that happens for us. We can hear some things, and it may not come back to us for a little while. But Paul said this gospel has been proclaimed. He said you need to stand in it, and he said you need to hold it fast. What's that tell us about the preaching? We don't want it to come in one ear and go out the other. Now, if we ask what was preached a month ago, you may not remember. I don't expect you to remember. I don't think anybody who's preaching should expect you to remember. But it's kind of like, what did you eat a month ago? Well, you probably can't remember that either. But still, you're trying to take that information, and maybe you don't walk away with every single thing, but what are you trying to do?
Get the highlights.
Oh, okay. Take the highlights? I think that would be a good explanation. Anybody else? Sometime, hopefully you can find at least one thing. That's one of the things that I do when I listen to somebody else preach, trying to walk away at least with one thing that I can put in my brain.
Isn't it commonly said that we only remember 10% of what we hear?
I think that's probably true, Bonnie. Even if you're dealing with a loved one, you know, you kind of listen, and sometimes, you know, 90% of it goes out, and you're just kind of, okay, what was that key thing I needed to remember? Condense it down, huh?
Yeah.
Yeah. It is. Okay, so there's that. Anything else? What are you doing? Week after week.
Same old stuff.
Okay. Some of that's going to reinforce. For example, you've heard it before, and okay, you know, that's reinforcing material. Anything else? What about taking something and letting that spark some additional thoughts, possibly? Think, I had never thought about that before. Maybe that wasn't developed a little more in the sermon, but on my own, I'm going to be thinking about that this next week, and so forth.
Well, it's like the daily Bible reading. If you read the Bible in a year, and you're going to start it all over the next year, a lot of people in the world don't understand that. But you know, you got to keep it going. So, whether you remember it or not, if you do remember it, you're still going to pick up something that you didn't pick up the year before.
Yeah. And sometimes you can relate something that even though you may not remember all the specifics, you kind of remember the general gist, and you're in a certain circumstance in life where you're having to face a decision or make a choice, and you think, hey, yeah, I can't quite put all the things on it, but I do remember that topic being discussed by somebody someplace in the past, and this general principle will relate to this, and that's going to help me. So when you think about that proclamation, he says, stand it. Galatians 1. 8-9 and 11. Anybody there and got it? Willing to read? All right, Steve.
But will you preach any other gospel to you? I won't be a priest to you, but it occurs. As it said before, so now I say again. If anyone preaches any other gospel to you, what do you have than what you have received, let it be accursed. First of all. But I make known to you, brethren,
okay. Anybody ever had something that they thought was the real stuff but turned out not to be? The real stuff. You wanted the real stuff and it wasn't. Gary?
That's a bad example, but to Taylor bought me some Kit Kat candies for Halloween, thinking that they were the normal Kit Kat, but no, they were covered in white chocolate instead of regular chocolate, and that was quite a surprise. It was colored orange white chocolate, so she didn't know, but anyway. I thought I was getting one thing, and I had something else. It wasn't the real thing.
Uh-huh.
I'm still eating.
Good for you. Good husband. What about iced tea? Anybody ever serve you up some tea? Maybe you like sweet tea, maybe you like unsweet tea. My choice is unsweet, but somebody dumps a bunch of sugar in there, I'll tell you what, it's not the real thing, at least not for me.
Or if you go to a restaurant and they give you the powdered stuff out of the jar, and you think you're getting fruit tea.
Yeah. Galatians 1:8-9, it's the real stuff. Paul said the gospel that's proclaimed, it's the real stuff. You don't want the fake stuff. He said, if you have the fake stuff, even an angel would be condemned for that. And then he says in Galatians 1:11, it's not after man. What do you think he means by that? What we proclaim, it's not after man.
Man didn't devise it.
Yeah, this isn't something that we came up with or anybody else. This came from God. And if it came from God, then it's the real stuff, and that's the one that you need to stick with. So when we think about proclaiming the gospel, again, it's not a word that is used by Luke in that case. It's a word that's used by Paul, same word. But it also gives us some information that's helpful. All right, two more references. Hebrews 4:2. Who's got it? Carol?
For indeed we have had good news preached to us, just as they also, but the word they heard did not profit them, because
united by faith in those who heard.
Okay. The word was preached. And that word, would you say that that word was consistent with Galatians 1, 8, and 9? It was the pure word? It was the right stuff. It was the real stuff. But what was the problem? The end result was just as bad as not having the real stuff. Why? It was not united or joined with faith. Connect that. Explain that a little bit. You've got the real stuff. It's not united with faith. How does that work? All right, that would be one example. Yeah, you know, you can have the real iced tea, but if you don't drink it, it's not going to hit the body.
It's like trying to put a square peg in a round hole. They just don't match.
Yeah, you've got to have that faith, willing to believe, willing to act, willing to live by that faith. And if the two are not there together, it's simply not going to work. It's not going to function. All right, then we've got our final reference, 1 Peter chapter 1 and verse 12. Helper?
I have.
Maxine, thank you.
To them it was revealed that not to themselves, but to us, they were ministering, which now have been reported to you through those who have preached the gospel to you that the Holy Spirit sent from heaven, things which angels desire to look into.
Okay. Again, this word preached is used, but this time it's in a different context. Some things that were preached. Who was interested in knowing about that material?
Angels.
What are some people curious about today? Some things that they'd like to look into if they had the opportunity, the clearance, the ability. I'd sure like to know about that. Sure like to check into that. What would people like to know about?
Angels is a big thing, like you mentioned earlier.
All right. People would like to know about the supernatural. Angels. Some would like to know more about the evil side of that. What about Area 51 and UFOs? I mean, there's some people, they spend hours, I mean, literally thousands of dollars, tens of thousands of dollars trying to figure out whether or not we've been visited and whether or not our government has some kind of secret facility out there in Nevada or some other place. But here's some information that Peter says angels wanted to look into, the things that have been preached. That tells me that the Bible is an interesting book. There's a lot in there that we can dig out, a lot there that we can learn, and not just idle knowledge, not just factual knowledge, but also some things which are very, very practical. So as you look at this word again, you sort of see this progression. Jesus talks about it a little bit. Mark and John really don't have much of anything to say about it. But you come to Luke, and again, maybe because of how he structured his writings, this is a big word, this idea of preached and proclaimed. It's not the only word for preached or proclaimed in the New Testament, but it is one. It's one that he used more than 50 times. One that we find more than 50 times in the New Testament, and it's a very, very significant word. Anything that you want to ask over what we said thus far, Stan?
Back to we were talking about the verse that says that we are men of like passions, and we talked about the fact that essentially we have that in common with people of the world. But how do you reconcile that with the scripture that says that we're to be in the world, but not of the world?
Okay, let's take a look. Let's go over to Romans 7. Not everybody understands this passage in the same way. I'm going to give you how I understand it, and I think it's the best explanation, but anyway, that aside, I do. Romans 7, verse 7. What shall we say then? Is the law sin? God forbid. Howbeit I, that would be Paul, had not known sin, except through the law. For I had not known coveting, except the law said, thou shalt not covet. But sin, finding occasion, brought in me, again, that would be Paul, through the commandment all manner of coveting. For apart from the law, sin is dead. And I, again, that would be Paul, was alive apart from the law. But when the commandment came and sin revived, I died. And the commandment which was unto life, this I found to be unto death. For sin, finding occasion through the commandment, beguiled me, Paul, and it slew me. So that the law is holy, and the commandment holy, and righteous and good. And then he says, let's skip down to 14. For we know that the law is spiritual, but I am carnal. Now think about that. If Paul is really describing himself, you have this guy who's an apostle, somebody that a lot of people really look up to, and he says, I'm carnal. I'm sold under sin. For that which I do, I know not. For not what I would do, that I do, I practice. But what I hate, that I do. But if what I would not, that I do, I consent unto the law that is good. And then down in 18 he said, For I, again that would be Paul, know that in me, that is in my flesh, dwelleth no good thing. For to will is present with me, but to do that which is good is not. For the good which I would, I do not, but the evil which I would not, that I practice. So you have here a tug of war. And I think it's Galatians 5, verse 17. I'd have to look and double check that, but if that's not it, it's pretty close. Paul said the flesh lusts against the spirit and the spirit against the flesh, and these two are contrary to one another. So however you regard Romans 7, the passages that we look at, Galatians 5 seems to be especially clear. I think that they are parallel texts. And Paul is saying, look, here I am. It's me, super apostle, the same guy that you have in Acts chapter 14. We are men of like passions. And he's saying, we've got this struggle with sin. We want to do what's right. We want to live in the right way. We want to make the best choices. But still, there are times where sin wins. We are not perfect people. And that's going back to Romans 3:23. For all have sinned, past tense, and fall short, present tense, of God's glory. It seems to me that Paul was especially conscious of the fact that even though he really struggled to live, you know, he still saw his shortcomings. James is probably James 2:10. He said, For in many things we all stumble. That would be James' version of it. So, to go back to your question specifically, when you think about people in the world, how concerned are they, generally speaking, about wrong? I cussed today. You know, he deserved it. My wife deserved it. She deserved more than she got. When you start thinking about how people in the world think and act, that's what you hear sometimes. Now, they might be sensitive to sin. For example, you know, if they kick the dog, they might be sorry about that a little later. Or if you know, they hit the wife or they cuss the wife or some things like that, they might be sorry. But it is not that general desire to try to do what's right. Their looking at sin would be entirely different. When we think about some of the songs that we sing, there's one, I don't see any song leaders. Well, Gary, you might remember, I've hurt you, Jesus, I've hurt you deeply. I don't remember the exact words, but maybe you can kind of, that doesn't ring, or Don, maybe. Anybody else in here lead singing? I guess not. Or Jeff, you do. Okay. That ring a bell with you? It's kind of a devotional song for kids. But anyway, I think you have to look at that and say that the Christian views sin much, much differently.